Yes! No, it is. It is! The Alex Dono Show here on WQAM. With you till 10 o'clock tonight on this Wednesday. I feel like a lot of the days of the week have names here on this radio station. Like, you have Dolphins Monday and Football Friday, Jersey Tuesday. What is today? Is there any name for Wednesday, Sports Bomber? I don't know. We don't have, like, a theme around here.
Hump Day, man. Do you really need a theme?
I guess that's all it is. It's an Antoine Staley Wednesday. Our friend Antoine Staley from Dolphins Wire at USA Today and Athlon Sports joins us now on the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Antoine, how's your week going so far, sir?
I can't complain. I got back in town yesterday from New Jersey, covered the game on Sunday, so everything's going well.
Antoine, I'm thrilled to see the Dolphins at 2-0. Of course, you still have certain haters on social media. Well, I feel like they'd rather this team be 0-2 so they can complain. But they're still going to complain when this team is 2-0. Like I get it. You can make excuses for these victories. And okay, the last time I think they started 3-0 back in 2013, they ended up going 8-8. That's fine. But how should I feel after this 2-0 start? Because I'm pretty damn satisfied.
Yeah, I think you should be. I think you should be optimistic. You definitely, this is the best case scenario for Dolphin fans. I said it before the beginning of the season that they need to start 3-0 before they play New England on September 30th, and now you're 1-1 away from doing so. You're playing a Raiders. Now you're going up against a Raiders team that doesn't have a win, but it's very dangerous. Obviously, they can score some points. Jared Cook ended up torching the Dolphins defense last year, if fans remember that on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah.
And you know what they say about desperate teams. They're going to do all they can to avoid to go 0-3, and I'm sure John Gruden definitely does not want to go 0-3 to start up the year. But yeah, I think Dolphins fans should definitely be optimistic about where their team is, because I mean, it could be the other way around, where they could be 0-2 and have no faith in the world.
You know, you've been around this team, and sometimes when there's an injury and when a guy doesn't practice, you can kind of tell by the way Gase talks about it that, okay, this one's not that big of a deal, or this one is a big deal. Yeah, I mentioned in the update that Rashad Jones missed practice with a shoulder injury. Does that one seem like a concerning one as far as his status for Sunday?
No, they say it's going to be day-to-day. I don't think so. Even if he doesn't play, I don't see it being a long-term injury. The Josh Sitton injury, you kind of felt like it was going to be something serious, because they said they were still trying to evaluate, which in my term, they're still trying to figure out if surgery might be the best option for the team. I thought it was definitely worse than what they were letting on. The Rashad Jones injury, it kind of came out of nowhere. They said it was worse on Monday than it is today. We'll see how it progresses throughout the course of the week. But even if he doesn't play, I think fans shouldn't be too worried about it, because I expect him to play at least against the Pacers, and that might be the most important game. Not necessarily this week against the Raiders.
Yeah, they did win on Sunday again. They defeated the New York Jets. But could you notice the lack of Josh Sitton? What was his absence with Ted Larson filling in? Was that noticeable to you?
A little bit. I mean, Ted Larson did let up a sack and have a sack, and the Dolphins were getting pressured throughout the course of the game. I don't know if that had a little bit to do with Sitton. I'm sure it did. You know, because Terry Larson isn't necessarily the best pass-blocking guard in the world. But I think the Jets defense would have gotten penetration on Ryan Tannehill regardless. And there were some cases where Tannehill did hold the ball too long. He could have thrown it away. But, no, I don't think it was that big of a deal with sitting out. We'll see how long that holds up. I will say this. They definitely have to hope Ted Larson can stay healthy now. Because if you don't have Ted Larson in there, now you're starting to get to the to the bones of your offensive line, and then you're relying on maybe a guy like Abiata, who somebody that has not panned out in the league, and you might have to bring him back up to practice squad. And I don't think that's something the Dolphins definitely want.
Antoine Staley from USA Today, Dolphins Wire, joins us here on WQAM. He also covers the Miami Hurricanes for Athlon Sports. I want to get to them in a minute. But on Ryan Tannehill, Antoine, there's a stat that's been going around social media that it's almost like a Rorschach test. It's like people who like Tannehill will retweet this with pride. People who hate Tannehill will mock this. But Ryan Tannehill, over his last 10 starts, is 9-1, which is among the top starting quarterback records in the NFL over the last 10 games. And so at some point, do you have to look at that stat and say, okay, this is a little bit lucky for Tannehill, or do you set back and say, hey, the guy's a winner?
Yeah, I think he's doing everything they want him to do. Look, I mean, Tannehill is who he is. He's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not Tom Brady. He's not Drew Brees. But I think the one thing I've seen the past 10 games, even dating back to 2016, that he's just taking what the defense is giving him. He's not trying to do too much. He's not holding on to the ball extensively long like he did early on in his career. He's definitely not turning the ball over as much like he did early on in 2016. Yeah, it was two interceptions against the Titans, but I definitely think he's playing some of the best football he's played throughout this stretch. And even with the 21 months off, I definitely think that he's still playing as good as he played before he got hurt, and also on that mobility. You know, even outrushed the entire offense last week on Sunday. I think he's playing a complete game, and I think he's doing everything the Dolphins want him to do in order, of course, to win the game. And that's all that matters. It doesn't necessarily mean you need to put up 300 yards every single game and go for 5 touchdowns. He's just doing exactly what Adam Gase and the whole organization want him to do, and that's be a winner and win football games.
Yeah, I look and see how well Albert Wilson is playing, and obviously how well, specifically in the first game, Kenny Stills played, and we know what he's capable of. We know what Danny Amendola is adding to this team. Where does Devontae Parker even fit in with that, Antoine? And do you expect him to be able to? You know, I know that he was frustrated about not being active this past week. How do you expect that the Devontae Parker saga of him getting on the field is going to play out this year?
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting because yeah, they played well without him, and to be honest with you, I said on numerous occasions, that you look at the first two games, has anybody really said, oh well, they missed Devontae Parker?
No,
I don't think anybody has at all. He's kind of been an afterthought, and now you have him coming back in there, and now you have to kind of incorporate him with all the other players on that football team. I will say this: he does give them a dynamic that they don't have with any other receiver. And that's the ability to go up and jump the ball, get the ball at the highest point. You just have to hope he can stay healthy. But, I still expect them to start Albert Wilson. I don't know how much Jakeem Grant. He might be the one that suffers from playing with Devontae Parker being back. But I still think they should play Albert Wilson regularly. I think he's played a really substantial role in the first two games. Obviously, you got Amendola and Kenny Stills there. Yeah, just try to get everybody involved and just spread the wealth, and I think that's what they've been doing without Jarvis Landry so far.
Do you have a prediction for Sunday, Dolphins Raiders? Do you think they get to that 3-0 mark, and how does it happen?
I do. I think it's going to be an interesting game because the Raiders, their defense hasn't been very good, albeit they play a really good Rams team, which I think might be the best team in the NFL, and they also played a really good Broncos defense that features Von Miller. They were up in that game as well at one point. So I definitely think they're gonna score some points. I think it's going to be a very fun game, but I definitely think the Dolphins are going to – we got another win, just kind of like what they always do, and move on to 3-0 before they play New England on September 30th.
How scared should every AFC East fan who doesn't root for New England be about Josh Gordon to the New England Patriots? Because that's one of those things where – I feel like for a lot of teams, he would probably crash and burn, but New England seems like a place because you saw what happened with Randy Moss and Corey Dillon and other reclamation projects. I'm worried that Josh Gordon becomes a stud up there.
Well, yeah, and not only that, they're getting Edelman back as well to go along with Gronk. I don't know. I think the Dolphins are playing them at least the first time at the right point of time because at least Gordon is still getting acclimated with the Patriots offense. Later on in the season in December, all bets off. He might be locked in at that point. And then you have Edelman coming back. You have Gronk doing Gronk things. We obviously know the struggles the Dolphins have had trying to cover him. And, yeah, it's going to be a problem. So, yeah, if you're a fan of any team in the AFC, I think you're kind of a little bit worried that Josh Gordon ended up going to New England of all places.
We're talking with Antoine Staley, covers the Miami Dolphins for Dolphins Wire at USA Today, covers the Miami Hurricanes for Athlon Sports. And, you know, before we look ahead to FIU and beyond, Antoine, a couple of your thoughts on this past Saturday at Toledo. I got to say that Malik Rozier, to me, played his best game since last November. I think that's a pretty obvious thing to say. Should I be optimistic that he can actually kind of snap out of the funk that he's been, or could that have been an isolated performance just based on, Toledo's lack of defense?
I think he'll take any kind of good performance that you can from Malik at this point. He hasn't shown necessarily the ability to put up one of these performances since last November, to be quite honest with you. So I think any kind, no matter who you're playing, I think it's just going to give him more of a confidence booster going forward. And, yeah, I mean, Toledo doesn't necessarily have a great defense. They're obviously not a Power 5 program, but you play who's on the schedule, and I think he played really well, probably his best game, like you said, in some time. And not only was he throwing the ball pretty effectively, he's also running the ball, something that I think he should definitely do a little bit more. And he just played a great all-around game. So I just think it's really encouraging to see him perform really well, especially leading the SU during the interconference play in a few games.
And is DJ Dallas the best running back on this team, at least right now?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's no question to me. I think he's very athletic. Speedster can do a lot of different things. I like Homer. I think he's a good number two running back, but I just think DJ Dallas brings a dynamic to this football team that they certainly need on their offense. And yeah, there's nothing wrong with having two quality running backs that can run the rock and share the wealth. And I definitely think that's something that they're able to do. And you add Rozier's rushing yards there included. It's definitely a three-headed monster there in Miami. So I definitely think that's something that they should take advantage of going forward.
Now, Antoine, I'm a Miami alum. Obviously, I ride and die with the Canes no matter what. I know that there are a lot of FIU alums and FIU current students who, you know, for the most part, do cheer for the University of Miami. That's their team, even if that's not their school. I've noticed a lot of backlash on social media this week with, you know, people who attended FIU, like begging other FIU people, I do not root for Miami, you must show all your pride in FIU. Antoine, is there any issue, even if you went to that school, if you're a lifelong Miami Hurricanes football fan, I don't think there's anything wrong with cheering for the U.
No, I don't. I think Miami is a very unique situation where a lot of their fans didn't necessarily go to the school. That's just the reality of it. That's something that I've noticed just living down here for 6+ years now. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. As long as you're a loyal fan, you're diehard, you pull for them through thick and thin, whether they go 5-7 or 11-1 or whatever the case may be. I don't care if you went there or not. I think it's cool to just root for whoever you want to, no matter if you went to FIU or Miami. So I don't understand the beef there, and I know a ton of FIU people that went to FIU that root for Miami.
Yeah, me
and
too.
It seemed like it's this week in particular, all of a sudden they said, oh, well, we're going to pull for our school. Just pull for the team that you've always been pulling for. Not everybody gets into Miami. Miami is a very expensive school, as you know, personally.
Yeah.
So, you can still root for Miami and go to FIU or whatever the case may be. I know people that went to Florida and still root for Miami. So I don't think it's any problem with that.
Good for them, by the way. So this Saturday, Miami and FIU, the 21st-ranked Canes are a 26.5-point favorite in this game. That's a monster number. What does FIU need to do this Saturday, Antoine, to keep it close and give themselves a shot at the upset?
I think you have to run the football. That's one thing FIU does have, a pretty good rushing attack there. If you can somehow be able to run against a very stout Canes defense, which is ranked 21st right now in the NCAA, I'm writing about it. My preview on the game ends up coming out tomorrow for Athlon Sports. Yeah, I think if they're going to run the ball, try to shorten the game as much as possible, keep the chains moving and keep the Canes offense off the field, I think that's their best chance to pull off the upset. I don't see it happening, but if you can make it as close as you can and make it entertaining, I think that's exactly what they're going to have to do.
Great stuff here as always. You want to follow this man on Twitter is it Antoine V. Staley? That's correct, right?
Well, just Antoine Staley on.
Yeah, I had to ask you because I got a little shook. I had to call an audible because I had your Twitter page open, and then I got distracted by my mentions like a dog that sees something shiny, and so I took your page off. So it's just Antoine Staley, A-N-T-W-A-N Staley. And check out his work,
sir.
Dolphins Wire at USA Today and Athlon Sports, where he covers the Canes. Great stuff, Antoine, and I appreciate you making us a part of your night.
Yeah, no problem, Donovan. I'll see you this weekend.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm going to see him almost too much this weekend. I wish they could like stagger out these home games so I don't just have to spend like an entire weekend at the stadium. Yeah, I'll be at Hard Rock Stadium Saturday for the ass whooping that Miami's going to put on FIU and for probably the very close victory that the Dolphins will put on the Oakland Raiders on Sunday. That's going to be an ass whooping, right, Sports Bomber? I mean, Miami is going to show no mercy against Butch Davis, Ken Dorsey, and the FIU Panthers.
Absolutely no mercy. Just call them Cobra Kai.
Sweep the leg. Get him a body bag. I want to talk some Jimmy Butler when we come back. Is that the trade possibility? Does that entice your Miami Heat? The Alex Dono Show continues. You know, all in all, this has been kind of a tough week for me. And if you've been following my Twitter, you may have seen some clues to this. A friend of mine who's actually a media friend of mine who's been on this show before talking college football. He covers college football out on the West Coast. He also covers Marvel movies and comics. So we've snuck in some spots on that as well. Josh Webb Thompson. This dude has literally been missing for about 3 days.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's really tough. It's something that he's actually spoken about openly, both on this show a couple of years back. I mean, he told me some unbelievably heart-wrenching stories about his upbringing and his struggles with depression. And it's one of the things, like, if you've heard what this man has had to go through, who, you know, and what kind of makes me sick is anytime you hear about somebody who is clinically depressed or somebody who takes their own life, you'll always have people come out and say, oh, that's a coward. What a cowardly thing to do. Deal with your problems like a man the way that I do. Like, if you've ever been down the road of depression, something that I don't talk about a lot for obvious reasons, but certainly not to the extent that some of my friends have, it is something that I have struggled with in the past. And if you've ever had actual depression, like not just upset because, you know, you're having an argument with your wife or upset because you're running short on money. Like, if you've actually suffered from clinical depression or depression caused by a chemical imbalance, you know how hopeless those feelings can become, right? You know how utterly hopeless and worthless, and I have not suffered it as badly as some of my friends have. And Josh Webb Thompson, who has been on this show over the last 6 years, probably been on this show a dozen times talking college football or talking Marvel movies, before he disappeared. And what makes this even harder is that, you know, for those of us here on the East Coast, me included, there's not much we can do at this point. He lives in Bakersfield, California, and the police know about it. His family and friends know about it. They're looking for him. They're doing whatever they can. Given the serious depression that this man suffers from, the last time anybody saw him, I think it was on Sunday, he, was writing some tweets about how he was going to take his own life, even posted a little video where he was clearly not there, whether it was substances or just the extreme depression kicking in, and talked about basically saying goodbye to everyone that he loves. And nobody has seen him or heard from him since. And this has been something that it's been, I'm bringing it up so that you understand this. I consider this to be like a member of the Alex Dono Show family. This is a personal friend of mine. When my son was born, he sent a gift to my child, and it has just been wrecking my heart and wrecking my mind that, you know, I know his wife personally, and I know what she, I mean, I can only imagine, because I've only corresponded with her a couple of times briefly, but I can only imagine what she is going through right now. And one of the kind of bizarre, and all this to say, I hope he has not taken his own life. I hope he has not gone through with this. I hope he's just laying low somewhere and nobody can find him. And one of the other things that this is a very unique to 2018 issue that really wrecks me is, so a couple, 24, 36 hours after he had disappeared and been missing, you know, his wife, Celeste, actually logged on to his Twitter account and started like tweeting to see, hey, like this is not Josh. She doesn't have her own Twitter account. So she got on his Twitter account, was kind of asking people, you know, maybe if any of his social media friends could help, if they knew anything. And I don't know, like this bizarre thing, I guess, that just happens in the world we live in. People seeing that, oh, his wife was on his Twitter actually responding people, and God forbid she's not looking for him literally every second of every hour of every day. People are now on Twitter saying, oh, this must be a hoax. He hasn't really disappeared. And I can tell you, folks, I know this man personally, and I know he has attempted to take his own life multiple times during the 7 or 8 years that I've known him. This is a legitimately depressed, sick person who struggles with this every single day, struggles with the weight of that sort of depression. You know, I think it's kind of sick that people are out there rushing to a judgment that just because his wife logged onto his Twitter account to ask people for help, that this must somehow be a hoax. It's really, as you can imagine, Sports Bomber, this has been weighing on me for the past 4 days really heavily.
That's despicable by those people online, and they have absolutely no heart, and they don't understand how tragic this can be. Like my thoughts to your friend, to his wife. I know on a deeply personal level what she's going through.
Yeah.
If I know nobody on the air knows this, but I lost my wife back in March of 2017 to this disease.
I'm so sorry, man.
And she's This is a real thing. This is something she knew about, was clinically talked about. You know, you can talk to your doctor, you can get medication, you can fight against it, you can talk about it, but it creeps and it creeps and it creeps, and before you know it, something like this could happen. And yeah, man, you know, I wish nothing but the best. You know, I'll be more than happy to speak to his wife if anything comes out. I pray on my beliefs and my God, I pray he's okay. Yeah. I pray he comes home. You know, this is so tragic, and it takes lives. And anyone who sits there and calls somebody a coward for taking their life because they don't understand what they've been through, what goes through their heads. You know, it's small minded of you. It's insensitive of you, and frankly, it makes you a terrible human being. And I don't say that lightly or facetiously.
Yeah, and I can say just on my own limited experience, when you get to the darkest possible places mentally, it's hard to talk to people about it, right? Like that, I think that's like the big catch-22 about this is that they always say, and I'm sure it's true, I'm sure it's correct, that when you are extremely depressed and when you are having these negative thoughts and you're feeling hopeless, that you need to talk to somebody about it.
Absolutely.
You need to confide in a family member and friend. But I can tell you, the times I've been in the worst place as Sports Bomber, and maybe this is different for different people. It sounds like it's this way with my friend. Sometimes the hardest thing to do when you're in a dark place is to talk to someone about it.
The
isolation just becomes, it's part of what's making you miserable, but it's something you feel is necessary in that moment, and that only makes it worse.
Yeah, no, what ends up happening is it almost becomes, I guess you could say, for lack of a better term, almost a self-fulfilling prophecy, because you feel trapped and lonely, but you feel helpless to reach out. You know, feel like I can tell you in my wife's case, you know, she always felt like this was kind of like, oh, they don't need to keep hearing this. They don't need to keep hearing this.
That's a great point as
you
well.
You know, like they start telling themselves, you know, they keep hearing about my depression. They don't want to hear it. You know, they're people are disappointed in me. That was a big thing for her, you know, and it becomes this cycle of negativity in your head. A therapist once told me it's called the committee.
Mm.
You know, you get the committee in your head and they start giving you ideas. And yeah, you know, when, you know, I never actually thought I'd be speaking about this stuff on air, but you know, when my wife took her life, you know, she left a note, and one of the things she said on that note was that she was a disappointment to me and to her family, and nothing could have been further from the truth.
Yeah.
You know, she lost a job. That's all it was, but it became the molehill became the mountain, and she didn't talk to me. She didn't even tell me she lost her job.
Wow.
She internalized everything, and you know, and the next thing I knew, I came home and I found what I found.
Oh,
you
man.
Know, and it's the hardest thing I've ever done. I wouldn't wish it. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. Wouldn't do it. And it's insidious. It's evil. I mean, sometimes it's hard to even describe where it comes from, but it just comes, and you have to be sensitive to it. And if you're out there, you know, you have a friend that you feel like is going through something like that, you know, kick down their door.
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing, because it's so hard for the person experiencing it to ask for help. I think a lot of times you have to read those clues.
They won't come to you, man.
Yeah,
they won't come to you. You have to see it. See the difference in their behavior. If you got a friend out there and they're acting a little weird and a little withdrawn and they're not coming out as much or calling or texting as much, maybe they don't want to play fantasy football this year. It's small things, man. Yeah. It's just small things. You know what? Reach out, kick down their door, invite them to dinner, invite her to lunch, you know, invite them somewhere, you know, get them out of their house, come see them at their house, sit down and watch Wheel of Fortune with them. Whatever it takes, man, just take the time, because one day that person may be gone, and
you know, sir, that I love you, and I know that what you just talked about is so much courage and just the horrors that I cannot even imagine, man. So, man, this it's just really tough. And like Sports Bomber said, if you know someone who might be experiencing something like that, it's really important to kick their door down and be proactive with it. The Alex Donner Show continues here on WQAM. Yeah, so far the only birthday present I've gotten was the present that my son left me in his dirty diaper. I don't know what that says about today. I mean, it is tough having a birthday in the middle of the week, right? Your birthday's on a Wednesday. I'm working all day today. My wife's working all day today. My kid left me an absolutely filthy diaper today. At least somebody thought of me.
Well, that's how you know he loves you, man.
Right? Yeah, no question about that.
I mean, if he just left you a couple little pebbles or something like that, you know he's not. You know, he's just like, whatever. It's your birthday. But when he goes full bore on you, man.
By the way, fatherhood is kicking up my sports superstitions to another level. I have come to find a trend developing, Sports Bomber. And so far, like, I do not have an adequate sample size to say that my son's activities have any effect whatsoever over a Hurricanes football game or a Miami Dolphins football game. But I have noticed my son can affect the outcomes of Inter Milan games, the soccer team that I root for. And I hate the fact that I have to do this, but I have noticed that. And we're five games into a season, Sports Bomber. I have noticed that Inter only scores goals when my son is taking a nap.
Ah.
So I have had to time out these naps, right? Like, you're down a goal. You're down a goal. It's time to rock the kid to sleep. I mean, it happened the other day. We're watching the Champions League game, Inter and Tottenham. Tottenham takes a 1-0 lead in the second half. All of a sudden, I see my kid's eyes getting sleepy. Time to rock him to sleep. He goes down for a nap. 10 minutes later, you get a beautiful game-tying goal. 5 minutes after that, game-winning header. Inter wins. They were down 1-0 when the kid was awake. 2-1 the final score while he sleeps. A few weeks ago in a Serie A match, they beat Genoa 3-0. It was a 3-0 win over Genoa. All three goals scored in the second half while he was taking a nap. So I've come to realize they only play well when the kid is napping.
Hey, man, you know what? Then you got to get that kid to sleep. But I like how you're well timing it there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you keep him up for the day. You know, the game's starting. You get down a little bit, make sure he's real nice and cranky, then put him down, give him that bottle just the right time. Get him down in there, put the little blankie on him. Boom, tie game.
I mean, I would love for him to experience game-winning goals and victory, but if that's only going to happen while he sleeps, then I've got to do what I can to help the team.
Somehow, I think that once you get past infancy, he's going to have plenty of time to enjoy game-winning goals as he gets older.
Yeah, that's fair. Like he only knows defeat so far. He's probably going to hate Inter, unfortunately, because anytime he's awake, they're losing that game. Oh, man, but I want to talk a little bit about Jimmy Butler. So Jimmy Butler has requested a trade. And, okay, I would like to see the terms of what it would take to make said trade happen. But I've noticed something that I see some Heat fans saying, oh, no, this guy's washed up, damaged goods, keep him away from my basketball team. He just turned 29 years old. Like, let's not talk about Jimmy Butler like he's a chewed up piece of bubble gum, right? Like, he is still theoretically in his athletic prime. So this is what Ira Winderman had to add to that situation today. In the South Florida Sun Sentinel. In the wake of the Athletic and ESPN reporting that Jimmy Butler had met with the Timberwolves, their coach Tom Thibodeau, that's his guy, I thought. He and Thibs, they had a run in Chicago, a run in Minnesota, but he requested to be moved in advance of next summer's potential free agency. ESPN initially reported a Butler wish list of the New York Knicks, woof, Los Angeles Clippers, Brooklyn Nets, woof. I mean, is he drunk when he's requesting these spots? Like, oh, send me to the worst possible teams.
See, I actually think that there's actually a reasonable mentality behind it. And it has nothing to do with Kristaps Porzingis or
okay.
anything like that.
What does it have to do with?
Okay. Think about it like this. Have you heard the stories about the NBA players who kind of have that mentality of like, I don't really care if I win or not as long as I get the ball and
right.
I shoot my
as
shots.
Long as I can score. I mean, you think about Kevin Love in Minnesota.
Exactly.
Right? Like he wishes he had never gotten dealt to Cleveland.
Exactly. Or who was that player for the Wizards and the Cavs many years ago? Larry Hughes.
Yeah, Larry and Gilbert Arenas also.
And Gilbert
I think
Arenas.
He can be an example
Perfect
of that.
Perfect examples. So you got Jimmy Butler here. Where does he want to go? The Knicks, the Nets, or the Clippers, the top two media markets and both teams that are struggling to have great players so that he can take a million shots in the top media market and say, hey, I am the New York Knicks. And hey, I can give you another example. How about Carmelo Anthony? What do you think Carmelo Anthony went to the Knicks to win?
Right.
He went to be in the Mecca in New
York
where
you're right.
his wife
yeah.
Lala lives.
He went to the Knicks to be on Broadway, to be under the bright lights, and to be the man.
And take 50 shots a game.
Right. And also like a plus of being the highest scorer on the New York Knicks, they have the most delusional fans in sports, right? Like you can be, even if the team is winning like 38 games in a season, you're scoring 28 points per game. They're going to love you over there.
Absolutely, especially when you have nothing else to cheer for because you're not going to the playoffs. You're the Knicks.
You know? Yeah, your season's done in mid-April every year. You get behind Carmelo.
Hey, take 50 shots a game. Don't play defense, threes, inside, outside, whatever. Everybody stands around while you ISO all day. Hey, no problem at all. And I think Jimmy Butler wants a little bit of that love.
You know, we've reached a point where, and I'm not saying I don't value winning and that shouldn't be the most important thing in sports, but I think we've reached this era when you've seen certain players, the LeBrons, the Wades, the Bosches, the Kevin Durants with him going to Golden State. Like, you're seeing an era where so many great NBA players are putting winning over personal stats and personal, adoration from fans that I think a lot of fans have now come to the mindset that, okay, that's the right way to do it. That's the only way you should do it. And if you do it any other way, you're being greedy. Isn't there something to say that it's not such a terrible thing to be beloved and to be extremely prolific in scoring on a team that's not great, but you are the man? Okay, I don't think we need to tear somebody down for wanting to be a great player on a not so great team. Like, we've reached this point where so many people get on their soapbox over morality and say, well, the right way to do it in the NBA is you should be willing to sacrifice points, triple doubles, double doubles in the interest of winning championships. You should put the Larry O'Brien trophy over everything. Well, no. What if you want to enjoy the quality of your life in a certain city? What if you want to be adored by a fan base rather than being the afterthought of a fan base, right? Different strokes work differently for different folks, right? If I can be a little corny for a second, right? Like, maybe Chris Bosh was perfectly okay with being the third scoring option and kind of a pincushion for a lot of fans, becoming the scapegoat when the big three wasn't always great. Chris Bosh would be the guy. Oh, he's not tough. He's soft. He's not aggressive enough. You know, he was willing to sacrifice that to win a Larry O'Brien trophy. That's one way to do it. May not be the only way to do it, right? If you want to be loved and adored and put up 30 points per game on a team that's winning 38, 39 games a season, I don't see why that's something fans have to rip you for.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's all about the mentality today. But, you know, if you think about the fans in those specific cities, I mean, is that really such a bad thing for them to have something to go there? Can you imagine, let me think of an example of this in the history. Okay, can you imagine the Philadelphia 76ers of the 80s without Charles Barkley? Hmm. The late 80s without Charles Barkley.
No.
How terrible would Sixer basketball be?
Yeah, yeah.
That would be awful. You think those fans were really happy Charles Barkley was there night in and night out? They may not have been winning, but you knew they were getting a double-double from Barkley.
Right.
You knew they were getting that personality every night. You knew they were going to get a tough competitor every night. And I'm pretty sure, because not that trading him came to any big success for the Sixers immediately, but I'm pretty sure that when he left to go to the Suns, yeah, they kind of sucked. And fans were still kind of pissed.
Well, let me bring up a more current example of that. It's why I love the idea of Dwayne Wade playing another year with the Miami Heat, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, okay, so without Dwayne Wade, they're probably winning 44, 45 games. With Dwayne Wade, they're probably winning 44, 45 games. But don't tell me you're not going to enjoy yourself a little bit more or a lot more at the American Airlines Arena this year, knowing you get to watch number three. I mean, listen, the fact that you know it's his final season, I guess, just adds the icing on the cake. But even if you didn't know that, right? Even if you didn't know for a fact that this is the farewell tour, you can't tell me Dwayne Wade on the Heat this year doesn't add to the entertainment of your experience watching them on TV or watching them live at the AAA, even though I can't even convince myself that Dwayne Wade makes a difference of a victory or two in the regular season. Maybe in the playoffs he might, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like you're basically the same regular season team, wins and loss-wise, as you are without Dwayne Wade or with Dwayne Wade, and yet I'm so thankful he's coming back to play this season.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely thankful, whether because of the history of that player in this organization. I don't think I've ever been angrier at the Heat organization when he left for that period of time. I was really mad at everybody. I thought they were being complete babies, both sides. But I felt like it was the Heat's job to really ingratiate themselves more to Dwayne. But that's neither here nor there. We're beyond that now. He's home. He's where he belongs. And I've heard this brought up recently. Oh, well, he doesn't want it to be the farewell tour, like, because you don't want that coat, because you want it to be like Kobe. You know, remember when Kobe was taking 50 shots a game? Well, let me let you in on a little secret. There's no way it's going to be like the Kobe farewell tour. Because number one, Dwayne Wade doesn't start on this team.
Right.
All right.
Right.
And number two, this team, think whatever you may of it, it's still going to be a 6-8 seed playoff team in the Eastern Conference, maybe even 5. They're still going to be there. They're still going to compete night in and night out. And they have the added bonus of whatever Dwayne Wade brings to the table is just that much more energetic for the fans. That might be the last time you see Dwayne Wade get a steal when you're in the house. That might be the last time you see Dwayne Wade hit that three or make that move to the basket, because he can't do it consistently like he used to, obviously, at one point in his career.
Sure.
But he can do it in spurts here and there. And you tell yourself, man, that's the last time I'm going to see him do it. That's the last time. One of the greatest athletes, if not the greatest athlete in professional sports in this city to ever play.
Yep. And you see, like, the ticket prices for the final regular season home game this year, well, it's going to cost you a couple of grand just to get in the arena. So I want to read some of the Butler texts and tweets when we come back and get a little bit more into what Ira Winterman had to say on that. Jimmy Butler, do you want him potentially with your Miami Heat this year? The Alex Donner Show continues next.